Well, welcome to this edition of the DHF podcast. My name is Rick Grace. I have the pleasure of serving as the DHF church liaison. And with me today are two people who are becoming friends, and now that I'm getting to know you guys a little bit more. It is so good to have you with us today. So God bless you both and welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We are happy to be here and just talk about what God has been doing, and we call it 1040 window.
Great to get to know you and Nancy better too, Rick. It's been a joy.
Oh, that was absolutely delightful. We so enjoyed having you guys over.
We and, out. Just,
no, yeah, we're hospitable Americans. What can we say?
I know. We'll bring our jammies the next time.
Now that may be pushing the limit, but we'll go from there.
Oh, I forgot.
Well, I want to welcome you guys back. It was so good to have our initial conversation with you and to talk and learn a little bit just about who you are and how God brought you together and how he has been using you. But we introduced a concept the last time we visited that it struck me after we got done that maybe some of our listeners or viewers are not as familiar with that concept as maybe certainly you are and as I am as well. Because we talked about the 1040 window. So let's pick it up at that point and define that for us. What exactly is the 1040 window? And just tell us some of the, maybe the demographics behind that.
1040 window, basically, we call it, its name is done, North Africa, Middle East, and Central Asia. It's about 29 countries involved in that. So, and it's used to be, well, you don't need it, used to be. So it's North Africa, Middle East, Central Asia. That's the kind of main meat, and it's 29 countries involved with that.
What about the population? How many people would live in that area?
In the whole area, it's about a little over 1 billion.
So 1/7 of the world's population lives in that 1040 window.
Yes, and 95% of that 1040 window are unreached people groups.
Okay, now let's make sure everybody knows what you mean by that terminology.
They don't like unreached people groups. I mean, they don't have churches. They don't have.
Less than 2%
of the population are believers. So no churches, no Bibles, no believers.
Well, they do.
There is, but it's, how do you call it, by percentage, yeah. So the every nation who lives in that area, the less than 2% of the population of the country numbers are Christians.
Mm-hmm. They've determined that it takes at least 2% of the population of a country or a people group to influence that people group. So that's why they still consider them unreached. There's the another step is that there are people groups that don't have Bibles, no Christians,
no
churches, no access to the Bible.
Wow.
Yeah, they are in the same region. They're like even more like not just unreached, they're completely, that is like, I mean, it's about 3,000 people groups that completely doesn't have an access, no Bible, no language skills like that.
Mm-hmm. So in the Bible, when it says a nation, the word is ta ethne, which means people group. Mm-hmm. And so there's 16,000 people groups in the world. 7,000 of those are considered unreached people groups, which are less than 2% Christian. And then there's another 3,000 who are unreached, what's the word I forgot?
UUPG.
Yeah, but what's the other one? Unreached and, anyway, that's the group that there's no Bible, no representative,
no Christians,
no churches in that people group. So and that's 3,000.
So there was 6,000 in the first group or 10,000 in the first group?
16,000
overall.
Uh-huh. 7,000 that are okay. unreached, but they do have Christians in that group.
Unreached, that means they have less than 2% believers in their cultures.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
3,000 people groups who even doesn't have that. So that is the 3,000 who lives in that area. No Bibles, no Christians, no churches, no access to the gospel. That's 3,000 people.
I think for many of us in the Western world, that's an inconceivable number. That 2,000 years after the birth of Jesus, there are still literally billions of people who have never had not just access to scripture, but in some cases have never heard the name Jesus even spoken.
Or never met any other Christian. Never.
Yeah, it's unfathomable until you've been in those places. When you look out and you see a sea of people and you realize no one here knows Jesus. And no one here knows anybody that knows Jesus because they're not in their area. Now, that doesn't mean they haven't gone on a website somewhere or seen it, you know, or something like that. But it just means that there's no living, breathing example of a real person in their sphere. And I would say even your family, besides you and I, mm-hmm. that's where his family is.
Yeah, like the rest of my families, my uncles and aunts and their kids, they know that I became a believer. But except me, they have never met other Christian person. They all live in their homes, in their area, and they probably never heard Jesus even, exist. They only know Muhammad and Allah. And that's
well, they know he. Well, they know Isa exists.
Well,
but
they don't read
never
the Quran. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But they've heard it.
Yeah.
But they, you know, it's a city of 500,000 people where most of his relatives live.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not at all cut off from the Western world.
You became a believer. Did you know any other believers in your country?
No. For the first 6 months, actually, a couple of guys who we were became believers, but there was other two guys who were with me, they became believers. Mm-hmm. And one of them denied it. 1 week later, he said, oh, no, it was a mistake. He left. And the other one, he was around for 1 year. And after that, he betrayed me and the other Christians, started going to the mosque and going to my parents, telling them that I became crazy. He denied Jesus and completely walked away. Mm-hmm. So I was the only one that I knew of. And later on, I met one family, but no young man. I never met any young man like me who's a believer, Uzbek. I met older people, not me. I was the first believer in my age, in my category, and during that time.
The guy he was talking about, what happened was his sister saw him wearing a bracelet, like a Four Spiritual Laws bracelet, and she told his dad what that was all about. And his dad asked him, are you a Christian? And he denied it.
Just like me, my dad asked me, and my dad tried to kill me, and his dad did the same thing. They're going to try to kill him, but he said, okay, I don't believe in Jesus, and he started going to mosque, and I don't know. It just...
Meeting with a mullah who twisted a lot of things in his head, and mm-hmm.
It's just like living the Book of Acts all over again.
Yeah. Oh, it really is, because you go in, and you are the first ones. You know? That's the thing. It's like with the disciples, they were the first ones that went in.
Actually, yeah, he came to my home and told my mom and dad that I was involved in the cult and they need to rescue me. And that's where my dad started doing more research. And he went to the local mullah who said, oh, okay, let me study this material and we'll see what we're going to do with your son. A week later, the mullah told my dad, well, it looks like they believe in this guy, Jesus, he's in the Quran, but we cannot do anything about it. Bring a picture of your son, we'll take care of him. And my dad's like, what you going to do? He said, oh, we'll kill him for you. We don't want Uzbek guys became believers like this. So there we have it. That's and I had a persecution from that too.
That is not something that most people in the Western world, one, have ever experienced, or two, could even get their minds around, that your family, simply because you say yes to Jesus, that mm-hmm. issues a death warrant on you.
And I don't know if I told you, but my brother, I met him. I mean, I do have a relationship with him. I talk with him time to time when I meet them. But he told me after 20 years, he said, "You don't know. You became a believer and you went to the other country. But we were here," and he said, "They were persecuted because their brother became a believer. His friends left him. They stopped inviting him to weddings and places. Like, oh, he's cursed. His brother became a believer, so we're not going to hang out with him." So even though they are Muslims, they still got persecuted because one of their family member became a believer.
What did Jesus say? "I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword, to set brother against brother, father against son, mother against daughter."
Yeah,
you know, and you see it. Yeah,
we can read that here in the U.S. and it's like, eh, you know, there's not, and for most of us, there is not a cost to becoming a Christian.
Oh, yeah. My nephew called me a Bible thumper, you know, so and that's, you know, that's the persecution.
I meet with four other guys on Monday mornings, and we've been going through 1 Thessalonians, and the study guide we've been using asks the question, "Have you ever been persecuted for your faith?" And all four of us had to look at each other and say, maybe some social isolation or ostracization. Persecuted? Mm-hmm. Uh-uh. No idea what that looks like. And what we in the Western world define as persecution, those in the developing world and probably in your 1040 window would look at us and laugh at what we would call persecution, because it just isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In our presentation, we have a picture of one of the guys that was on my basketball team. He was 18 years old, and he came into practice with these big aviator glasses on. And I told him, I said, "Ruslan, you can't see anything. You need to take the glasses off." So I thought he was just trying to be cool. He eventually took them off, and he had two black eyes. And he said, "I told my uncle I was a believer, and he beat me up last night." 18-year-old kid, sweet as he can be, and the uncle just pummeled him. And he's still a believer. We just saw him. We saw him when we were in a certain country in August. We saw him. He's doing great. He walks with the Lord, has a son, married, goes to church, had invited some students that were going to a youth conference to live at their house. And, you know, just cool to see that.
Oh,
to
that
see him
is.
Still walking with the Lord and going strong.
Because I can guarantee you in the U.S. on a rainy day, church attendance drops by 10% because people don't want to get wet for Jesus. And here you've got a young man who just, ugh. All right. Enough bashing of the Western Church, and it's not been you guys, it's been me.
You guys have your own issues.
It's coming.
Thanks. So what is going to make? Well, first off, kind of describe again what your ministry is going to be, because you are working in that window. So share as much as you can what your ministry is going to look like.
Yeah, my predominant audience are the influence area that I'm going to be working with, Turkmenistan, North Africa, Middle East, and Central Asia. And my work was included with the Jesus Film Project. We call it Partnership Accelerator. So we partner with churches, young church planters, and home group leaders, and train them an extra tool that they can use Jesus Film to reach their people. So I'll be traveling and we do training through our Jesus Film project, how they can use this movie, which is translated for more than 2,000 languages, and they can basically start with a home group, small group. They're going to show watch the film together and discuss about what they saw and share with them. And when they became a believer, they send them out and start the new church, new building. Not building, they don't really consider on buildings, but basically multiplying new churches. And when we say churches, it's like home groups. They're underground home groups, small home group churches. Two, three, just we had a couple months ago, we had a new group evolve. A mom and a son became a believer. They both got baptized, and they started inviting their relatives and neighbors, and they have 12 people in one small home group. That just a new church was born in like 2 months ago. So now they're going through the program. They're studying, basically studying the book of Luke through a movie. And when they've done that, and they're going to go out and share with the neighbor, find the man of peace and continue. It's a lot of details, but it's a really good program, how to start and continue on the new church and have multiplication in it.
And again, just to recap for some of our listeners that may not be aware, the Jesus film itself is nothing but the Gospel of Luke.
Yes, no, that's correct. The majority of the film, pretty much everything Jesus says comes out from Gospel of the Book of Luke, and it's of course narrator adds some things like he's going here, he's going there, when he speaks about the parables, when he heals the little girl, and all that is exactly the words are exactly same as in the book of Luke. And it's, they can see it, they can hear it, and basically pretty much they're seeing the small picture of what happened 2,000 years ago, what Jesus did, and exactly how the book of Luke. So that's pretty amazing. And they can sit and talk, discuss about, hey, what did you see when he's healing this girl? I saw this. So they, because you have to understand, those people, they never heard about who Jesus is. That's first time they're listening and hearing, oh, who's this guy? Why he's doing miracles? Can we talk about him? And just conversation is just, you cannot even believe what kind of conversation. Because I became a believer watching the Jesus film. And one of my questions was, why they killed him? Looks like he was a pretty good guy through the whole movie. He's healing everybody. Everybody loves him. He has 12 guys following him around. And he's, what do you call it? He's breaking all the stupid laws they have. And it's like, wow, this guy is a revolutionary. Why they killed him? That was my question. And of course, they told me like because of the sin of man. It's like, oh, wow, that makes sense. So for me, it was a breakthrough. It's like, wow. And I know this is just a movie, but I know it historically happened. That's just something I never heard before.
In addition to the social isolation, there we go, that can come to a family, I'm guessing in many of the countries in that 1040 window, it's illegal to become a Christian. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Some of the countries are completely illegal. Mm-hmm. You cannot convert to other religion. You have to be a Muslim. If you convert, you betray your people. And it's not only the idea, but it's because it's a shame-based culture. Even the family, relatives, and everybody will ostracize you because you betrayed them. Almost everybody that I know who Muslim background believer, we call it MBB, a Muslim background believer, they had some kind of persecution. And even I, before me, it was two or three, 5 years before me, it was a family who became a believer through a German Baptist church, and they stoned the dad in front of everybody, the whole neighborhood.
He was a pastor.
And the neighborhood came and stoned him in front of the kids and wife. Mm. And the mom and kids, they moved away. They evacuated them somewhere. But no persecution or anything. It just people came and stoned. So it's sometimes, it's radical.
So in a lot of these countries, you can be a Christian, which means you probably weren't a part of that people group to start with. Mm-hmm. But if you become a Christian and change your faith, then like he said, it's you're a traitor to their nation and you're sinful, more sinful.
Mm-hmm. And you got to understand some of the countries, they still today, they follow Sharia law in that region. And you know which countries I'm talking about, several of them. They follow mm-hmm. Sharia law. So it's they still have executions today. They, for stealing stuff, they cut your arms off, or they cut your head off. So that is still in the country level, judicial punishment is death for changing or for betraying your religion still today. In those countries, it's a Sharia law.
Homosexuality.
Oh, you're gonna, yeah, they will hang you for sure, and the rest of the family.
It still stuns me that there are some on the left in America that want to side with Hamas and those kinds of groups, and it's like, don't you understand? If you went to their country, they would kill you. Do you not get that? But anyway,
it's ignorance. They don't know, I think, or they deny it. You know, it's just like, oh, I can't believe anybody would do that. No, we'll go on over.
It's what Paul argues in Ephesians 2, that they've been blinded by the prince of the power of the air. You know, there's such a delusion, such a deception. But yeah, when mm-hmm. we were visiting with you guys the other night, well, let me phrase it as a question. What indications do you have that the Lord is already active in that area and is preparing the way for your ministry?
Well, one of the main things through our organization that we work for, Campus Crusade for Christ, we call it CRU, we have today in the North Africa, Middle East, and Central Asia, we have 793 missionaries who's working in that area. Only 793 for 1 billion people.
For 1 billion. Wow.
Over 1 billion. 793 missionaries. Well, yeah, but I mean, we do have people working there. So, mm-hmm.
And you shared with us the other night stories of dreams and visitations and, you know, those kinds of things that God's already stirring the pot. Could you share a little bit more about that?
Mm-hmm. As people have seen the Jesus film, or how God has visited them.
I mean, yeah, how God has visited them. People. Yeah.
So there's a radio tower that projects the Jesus film into those countries, mm-hmm. and there's a phone number at the bottom where they can call and talk. You know, like if you've done this, then you call this number. So at the end is a gospel presentation. And so there's a whole book. It's called I Just Saw Jesus. And so it's a whole book of these testimonies of people that saw Jesus and what happened. So this lady had watched the Jesus film. She calls and she goes, hey, I need to, Jesus told me to call you. And they're like, Jesus who? It's Jesus. He came to my door. They're like, What Jesus came to your door? The guy in white, the guy from the movie. They're like, no, he was in the movie. No, he came to my door. He knocked on the door. I opened the door and he came in. And he explained to me, I asked him into my life and that I can call this number and find out more. So Jesus knocked on your door and he actually came in and talked to you. Yes. What happened to him? He disappeared. But he told me to call you to find out more. So I'm calling. Like, okay, here's the material. You can grow and we'll be in touch.
it's really hard to believe for Western cultures, but can you imagine a place completely dark and nobody know? And of course, and if you know Bible, if you read your Bible, of course Jesus is going to work in there. Of course he's going to be going to people's dreams, and because people are simple. We said no. Most of the people said, no, I'm not going to follow him. I'm going to live my own life. How many? in the world, 8 billion people, only 2 billion identify as self as a Christians. And rest of this 5 billion people, they denied him. And of course, they don't want to know him. So Jesus comes to people in the dreams. I have seen him in my dream. When I became a believer, I didn't know if it's, I knew I trusted in him, but personally, I was having nightmares. And in my nightmare, I will be like in the dark tunnel, and I'm looking up. It's a small white hole, and I can try to reach it, but I never can reach it. And went on for like a month. And that was the period when I became a believer, and those people left, and I didn't know anybody. And so finally, I had those dreams. And one night, I was just outside chopping wood, and I was just talking to Jesus. You know, I can't tell anybody, just because this point I was just 3 or 4 months believer, and I couldn't tell any. I didn't tell anybody I'm a believer. So chopping wood and just talking to Jesus, and I said, I want to know who you are, and show me if you're real. So it's one big wind blow comes in, and I have this voice, I can hear it, says, Mata yete yete, which means, it's in my own language, but which means Matthew 7:7. I had no idea what Matthew 7:7 is. I even didn't know. I was like, what is that? What is that? And I thought about it, and somebody later on gave me a Bible. And I was like, I opened the Bible, and I see the names, I see the verses. And I was like, oh, this is maybe what it is. I'm looking through, it's like, oh, this is a Revelation, this and this, Luke. So I find this Matthew 7:7, and it says, you know what it says? It's one of my favorite verses, whoever knocks, the door will be open. Whoever seeks, will be fine. And I was like, that was me. He was just talking to me. That I had no idea. So that night I had a dream again. And but the light was closer. So, and I can almost reach the light and get out of this dark hole. And I can see the white hand, like a, well, I guess it's bright, really bright. Hand comes in through, and I touch his hand. He pulls me out, and I woke up. And I like, wow, what was this? And after that, I never had that dream again. I knew that was Jesus kind of pulled me out of that dark. And finally, I have seen he is the real God. And just, you know, imagine. So it's even me during that hard time. He came to my dreams and assured me that he is real and he's going to pull me out of that dark place.
Yeah, and that shouldn't surprise any of us. Joel prophesied in the 8th century BC that your young man will dream dreams and your old men will see mm-hmm. visions. And, you know, so mm-hmm. when God begins to move in fulfillment to his word, I don't know why we should be surprised. You know, you mentioned knowing your Old Testament. You know, Ecclesiastes 3, God has placed eternity in the hearts of all people. Mm-hmm. And there's some that, so he's already breaking the ground, touching the eternity that's already in the heart of that person, so that when mm-hmm. you're there to present the gospel through the Jesus Film Project, or Lisa, your ministry is going to be a little bit different than that. But mm-hmm. however that ranges out, God has already been there to prepare the way. And then you guys, you get to come in and are privileged then to help introduce people to Jesus. Mm-hmm. So just in a nutshell, what's your ministry going to look like?
He does. So he'll find the people or the groups that like a church planner who wants to have a strategy to reach people. So my team will come as a part of this too. We work together. We actually do the teaching of the strategies. Mm-hmm. And so we're teaching and training how to do it. So like what we're talking about with the particular strategy we're using right now, it's called Knowing Jesus. And we, you know, you have a Paul, who's the person who wants to do it. You have a Timothy, a guy you're discipling or a girl, and then a man of peace. So you look around and you find a place where no one's working, which where we work is not very hard. So you find an influencer and a man of peace, like someone who is not a believer, but they're open. Like you're talking about, like they're open to spiritual things. And so you say, hey, would you like to invite some of your friends over and we're going to watch a movie? And so they come over and they watch a movie, the Jesus film. And some may come to Christ, some may not. And you say, well, would you like to get together for the next 17 weeks, meet together once a week, and we'll talk about what this movie is? And they'll say yes. And so that's you start the group. And then for 17 weeks, you go through that. At the end of the 17 weeks, your Timothy has now been through the process, and he's going to go and start his group and plant another church. And so like Ruff said, this group that we went to in the spring, in May, before we came, they said they wanted to try the strategy to start a church. And so we didn't know that, so we would have been our best behavior. But so, you know, so we taught them, and the teaching team that, you know, the teaching team came and taught them. And then, you know, we check up with them, do Zoom calls and personal calls with them. And by October, they opened the new church. And so now they want to do another session in January to have 30 more people trained in this curriculum, and have trained two or three of their people to be trainers so that they could go into two very close countries. Mm-hmm. Where
completely close country.
Finland and you and I would be dead really quick.
Because they have connections and they have relatives and they have a border with those places. So they can just go there. They look like them. They look like me. Mm-hmm. So they can go in those places are completely closed and train people there, the new place.
So my team is a training team. So we'll go into this area that Rafshan's talking about when they find people. But there's people working like that all over the world through Jesus Film, the Jesus Film Project. And so so when they have a need for trainers, we'll go in. So one of the gals just went to Senegal and trained 300 African pastors.
With the team.
With the team. We also did, and another gal went to Portugal for a youth ministry where there are a million young people. And so we go in there and train them in these various strategies. And for us being at the world headquarters in Orlando, it's a place like the strategy we're teaching started in Central America with a pastor who used the gospel, the Jesus film that's been divided into 61 segments. And so he's the one that developed, it's called a missional group. And it's funny, part of it is called an obedience-based Bible study, which you would think kind of oxymoron, but it's not, right? So within the study, you watch it, and then you share what you observed, and then there's some questions that go with it. And then the final part is what do you want to apply to your life as a result of seeing this? And who do you want to tell about that?
Next week.
And so next week you come back together and you share what I applied and how that went, and then who I shared what I learned with. And so that a home group is not just a home group to be a Bible study together for the next 20 years. It's a home group that's going to multiply and divide. And so that training from Central America, I think he told our staff about it. They brought it back and made it into a training with books and things like that, that we could export to other places. And it's just catching on like wildfire. Mm-hmm. And so there's several strategies that we've been able to do, but it's developed there and then goes out to the world from the world. And so, you know, you ask about why we think God's working in this area. I think he's developing the kind of strategies and materials that can be used to reach a wide number of people. And it's probably not going to be the white Anglo-Saxon that do it. it's going to have to be a person from their culture. Because if you go in and you build, you know, you take, you know, you build your church, and you say, okay, doors are open, come in, they'll burn it and hang you up. Mission over, you know. So, yeah, so I think God is providing the materials. You know, we also use like projectors and tablets, SD cards. That these things can go in and people can, and they can use them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But one of the things that was almost completely missed by the American church is somewhere around 1992, 93, somewhere around there. So around 30 years ago now, the average Christ follower in the world was non-Western and non-white. And that's a stunning fact for a lot of Western Americans or Western believers to try to get their mind around. And that just went right by us. And for some reason, we still think we're the norm. And we're not. We're the minority. But it's a picture of what John says in the Revelation, that every tribe, every nation, every tongue will be in the presence of Jesus, and we will be with them and celebrating who he is and what he has done. Guys, any concluding postscripts you want to conclude with before we shut this down?
I would say, going off what you said, Jesus said, you know, we are talking about the end of the world and where that's going to come and all that. And he said, the good news of the kingdom will be preached to all the nations or people groups, and then the end will come.
Yeah.
So, amen. You know, if you want the timeline, there it is. We don't know when that'll be, but we're at least on the 30-yard line.
You know, there's a stunning verse in 2 Peter 3 where Peter writes to the church, and it's written as a word of encouragement, in essence, that as you look forward to the day of Christ coming, and as you look forward to the day of Christ and speed its coming, that's a stunning application that Peter's implying in the first century. God's waiting for us to get our job done. And our job is to go to every nation. So thank you guys for responding to the call of God. And if anyone listening to our podcast or viewing it online, because of the sensitivity of their ministry, if you are interested in learning more, I'm going to ask you to contact me, Rick Grace, at Disciple Heritage Fellowship. My email address is rgrace@discipleheritage.org. If you are interested in learning more in their ministry, make that contact through me, and then I will forward that on to these two servants of God, and then they'll be able to follow up after that. Well, guys, again, thank you for taking part of the afternoon to sit down and visit with me. Can't wait for this to get out for our viewers and our listeners to hear. God bless you guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the DHF Podcast. The DHF Podcast is a ministry of Disciple Heritage Fellowship. You can learn more about that by going to discipleheritage.org, where if you benefit from this ministry, you can also equip us to continue there. Disciple Heritage Fellowship is a fellowship of over 150 churches supporting one another, and we hope also supporting you. And if this ministry and this episode has been a blessing to you, we'd love a like, a comment, a subscribe, and of course, a share with your friends. All right, thank you very much, and we'll catch you on the next episode.